Hey everybody, this is episode 2 of What I Do With Food. My guest this episode is Joshua Sharkey. Josh is a chef who came up in the New York City restaurant scene. He built a restaurant group from the ground up, and he's now the CEO and founder of Mies, which is the recipe tool for professional chefs that allows them to transform their culinary content into an interactive database. It's spelled M-E-E-Z. You can check it out at getmies.com. In our conversation, we talked about Josh's career and the skills it took for him to transition from working in the kitchen to now working in the tech world. Check it out. It's an insightful conversation. Hope you enjoy.
Cool. Sorry, I didn't realize I didn't have my video on.
No problem. Yeah, mine was off too. But okay, cool. So this podcast, Josh, it's really about careers in the food industry, but kind of from a different perspective for things like outside of just being a chef or being a cook. So I'm trying to expose people or introduce people to different opportunities, right? So being that you are a chef and now a founder, kind of an app creator, just wanted to kind of know a little bit about your background and what led you from one career as a chef to doing what you do now with Mies.
I would say, it's been pretty linear. You know, like the beginning of my career was immersed in sort of the upper echelon of fine dining in New York City. So working for some of the best chefs in the world. And that's what I thought I would do for the rest of my life, honestly. I love it and I've always loved cooking. And it wasn't until, around 2008 when I started getting an itch to sort of start my own business and realized, I didn't understand fully sort of like all of the sort of methodologies around startups and things like that. I just knew, like, I lived in Brooklyn at the time. There wasn't really any good food that was casual where we lived. And so I started, a restaurant called Bark and ended up scaling that over the course of 8 years to several locations. And that was sort of my foray into entrepreneurship from going from being a cook and then a chef to being a business owner, which are pretty different things. You obviously can cook when you have a restaurant, but there's so many other things that you have to do. And then, through running that business, like all of us, we have lots of passions outside of just, the thing that we do. And cooking is a craft and an art, right? Like any art, I think that it's important to be able to have other life experiences and other interests in order to sort of enrich the thing that you do. And so I had that, I had other things that I loved. And one of the things was systems. I really love building systems. And so that sort of sparked this in this this really desire to build something for the industry that didn't exist. And again, I think every time I've started a business, it was just scratching an itch, something like I really wanted, or I felt like, I wish we had. And that's how Mies came to be. It wasn't from there that I went right to, building this new company. I knew to do it, you have ladders, right? You have like stepping stones to get to something. And I knew if I was going to do it the right way, one thing I learned from running a business is that you have to be well capitalized for certain things. And so I partnered with a pretty incredible restaurant group and sort of helped them to scale and sort of ended up, being a big part of that organization while they sort of helped to fund building Mies. And so, I transitioned from owning a restaurant to running a multi-million dollar, 100 plus unit restaurant group while building Mies in the ecosystem of that group. So then, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I stepped away from the day-to-day of that as a chief operating officer and focused full time on Mies, and here we are today.
I mean, that's really impressive. That's kind of what being a chef is about too, managing a lot of things going on at one time. So being able to manage kind of building the restaurant group and having half of your mind kind of turning around what Mies would become or what you wanted this new thing to be. What do you feel the learning curve was for you to go out of, coming out of restaurants in which you're kind of executing the day-to-day and keeping your eye focused on a customer experience to something like Mies, which is a little bit different, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge learning curve. I think though, like in the same breath of why cooking is so great is that I think the greatest sort of, challenges are the things that have the biggest learning curve, where you have to really immerse yourself you know, and start learning all these new things. And that's what's exciting about it. I didn't know anything about technology or about startups or about understanding, you know, early stage to late stage and, you know, all these things. And it was just, it meant reading, you know, hundreds of books and, you know, asking lots of questions and meeting lots of people way smarter than I am. And it was very similar to, you know, when I started cooking, you know, when I was very young and jumping into restaurants at an early age and, you know, and just reading every book I could about, you know, about cooking and then spending my nights like practicing knife cuts, you know, at home and staging everywhere for free that I could and working for free to learn as much as I can. You know, like, I think that's one of the beauties of like when you jump into something new is there's so much to learn that you just have so much to look forward to. So that was actually really exciting. Overwhelming and sometimes, you know, for sure when you're jumping into something like like founding a startup because, you know, it's a lot of capital that's involved and there's a lot of people involved and then there's, you know, a different type of instrument of investing that's involved. And so, you know, it's certainly a lot of new things to learn, but, you know, like anything, you know, you just, as long as you sort of put in the work and really, you know, spend the time, you know, learning and researching, you know, it's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So I see that you attended Johnson & Wales University.
About 21 years ago.
for culinary. So I came to culinary a little bit later in life, right? I went to school for business and I worked at a previous career in New York City working sales and I was a teacher for a moment. And then I was a little bit unhappy and decided I wanted to kind of shift and I decided to go to culinary school. So I went to the Institute of Culinary Education. And while I was in school, I'm thinking, you know, what am I going to do with this culinary degree? Am I going to go into a restaurant? I'm, you know, over 30 at this point. Am I going to start my own business? You know, what was the goal for me? So I came across what I'm doing now, which is technically culinary sales, but I do menu innovation for chain restaurants as a research and development chef. But at the time, when I was in culinary school and kind of talking to career counselors and things about going into this field, no one really, my counselor at the time didn't really have much advice for me. You know, it was kind of like a new thing for her to have a student come straight out of their culinary program at ICE, which is, you know, designed more or less to teach you how to cook, right? It's designed to teach you how to work in a restaurant. So they didn't really have much advice for me. So I'm asking, how well do you think your education at Johnson & Wales kind of prepared you for where you are now? I'm sure it prepared you very well to enter the restaurant industry, right? But transitioning from that to being a business owner, how well do you think you were prepared for that?
Yeah, look, what I would say is, and you know, it was so long ago, it's hard to remember some of it, but I would say Johnson & Wales and like many culinary schools, I think it prepared me institutionally to understand the concept of cooking. You know, I wouldn't say it necessarily prepares you to go work in restaurants. It's a very different thing, you know, because there's a culture and a sort of, you know, a work ethic to that that's not part of, you know, the education of understanding mother sauces and things like that. I think there is a difference there. And, you know, in retrospect, you know, look, a lot of good opportunities came from going to Johnson & Wales. So I don't regret it by any means. And I have some of my close friends that I met through there. But, you know, working in the field, there's no real sort of like substitute for just going and working in the field. First of all, you get paid, you know, and even if you get paid very little, you get paid to go learn. That's really where I learned a lot about not just about cooking, but you know, about what a job means, you know, what it means to sort of make the most of the job no matter where you're at, you know, and what it means to sort of the pursuit of excellence and what it means to like work with the team and all the skills that, you know, that are sort of globally important to no matter what sort of field of or vertical of the food industry you're in or any industry. Yeah. And so I think going and working in restaurants, no matter what you do, to be honest with you, I think everybody should try to go, you know, if you're going to be in the food industry, it's really helpful to understand that dynamic because there's a sense of urgency that you gain from having to, you know, cook in a kitchen, especially in a high pressure kitchen, there's a sense of detail orientation and preparedness. And obviously mise en place is a big part of that, that, you know, translates to a lot of different things, right? And typically when you start in the restaurant industry, you go, you pick your first job at a great restaurant, you're gonna get shit on, right? They're gonna beat the crap out of you, right? And right. It's gonna be a long, you know, journey to get to a place where like you and they feel comfortable that you're like, okay, here's my spot in this kitchen, right? I remember my first job in New York at Oceana, the first 6 months, it was brutal. It was just like, you know, and this was a long time ago. So, you know, you get plates thrown at you and things like that. But like, yeah. It was a lot of, you know, like the perseverance and grit that required to sort of get through that like incredibly tough time. Not just trying to learn everything, but also learn how to deal with, you know, not being good at something yet, right? No matter what, it's technique. There's a callus to that you get that's really important for anything else that you're going to do afterwards. So I always, tell people, if, you know, no matter what, especially if you're going to culinary school, go work in a restaurant. And then, first of all, you'll certainly appreciate more jobs outside of the restaurant, you know, if that's what you love, because restaurants are not easy. But the learning experience you get from that is irreplaceable. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, so many people have no idea what it's like to work in a kitchen professionally. It's, you know, it's mind-blowing. Even for myself, kind of coming from a culinary education perspective, like working in school, you learn to cook and then having to go stage or externships and working odd jobs here and there in kitchens. Yeah. Is, you know, completely different from, you know, what I would have expected coming into it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think what your path, and it's not uncommon anymore. And first of all, there's lots of great chefs that have started this way. The idea of that you started in a different vertical in business and then moved to culinary, I think there's something really valuable to that because you have a different perspective. Like, you know, all I knew was cooking in a kitchen for the first, you know, 15 years of my professional career. I didn't know anything else. I didn't even have a thought of like, oh, I would start a business. Oh, here's the economics of running a business. And here's what a P&L should look like. And, you know, what a four-wall EBITDA like needs to be. We didn't think about that. It was just cooking. And I think that having that perspective early on, when you then jump into that, I think there's some value to that. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily like that, you know, one has to come before the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned mise en place a little bit earlier. Let's talk a little bit about mise. Tell me a little bit about the app. Is it an app, or am I referring to it correctly? An app, or
yeah. I mean, it's a responsive web app. We're also building in, you know, iOS now, but. You know, essentially the idea here is that the vision here is to create the universal recipe medium, right? Like at the end of the day, when this is all said and done, every recipe, every professional recipe in the world should be created, managed, and distributed through Mise. And then it can go to all the other just places where recipes live, but that's our goal here, right? And so right now what we're doing is the sort of step one of that is creating what I call like a culinary OS, right? Like centralizing the culinary development, training, and production process into one tool, leveraging all the things that like I would have loved to have had in a tool coming up in kitchens and coming up as a, you know, as an operator and as an owner, and as a, you know, a menu innovator, all the things that I wish that like were bundled into a tool, like scaling and conversion, all the data built in and all the stuff where I, you know, how I can, you know, send the recipes to people and collaborate, like all the things that I want out of a tool just centralized into one place.
Excellent. Yeah. So I did get a chance to download a trial of it and kind of play around with it. I mean, really, really useful tool. Like, you know, it's amazing that it's not something that has been done before. I mean, there's different versions of it, sure. Kind of have a database and, you know, easily scalable recipes and things. I know that the goal of Mise is kind of to roll it out to professional chefs, but do you view it kind of being useful for the home chef or, you know, the amateur person kind of doing things at home?
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now, you know, I'm a big believer in focus, right? Like just do one thing sort of exceptionally well and then sort of, you know, take that and sort of run with it. And so right now we are pretty, you know, maniacally focused on the professional chef community, because the hypothesis being if I can create a tool that has, you know, incredible adoption among our peers as culinary professionals and solves an immediate need, and then becomes a day-to-day use for all, you know, all of these sort of culinary professionals, you know, step two is then to sort of create, you know, a medium in which they can connect with their consumers, because that is, you know, home cooks, right? And so be sending recipes to their audience, or, you know, even being able to like monetize their recipes some if they want, in cookbooks and recipe books. And of course, if the end user at that point is a home cook, then we also need to build, you know, UI that is, you know, more in line with what a home cook is used to, right? That some of the nomenclature that we use in recipes in professional kitchens is different, but some of the ways in which we actually use a recipe are different. So we started doing that, you know, originally with this thing called Recipes for Relief, where we, during the pandemic, we actually built a consumer version of the app and allowed chefs to sell their recipes to the public, and the public could pay whatever they wanted. And then 100% of the proceeds went to the chef and their business, and just to give back. And that was our foray into sort of starting to understand how consumers use, you know, a recipe tool, which we learned very quickly is very different from how a chef, you know, in a professional kitchen uses a recipe. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have some work to do there. We've been doing it along the way, to, you know, we haven't completely bifurcated like the way that we sort of develop. Like, we do think about the consumer at the end of the day. So we'll be planning for it. Right now, I think for the next year or so, we really are focused on, how do we make sure that this is an incredible experience for every culinary professional?
Awesome. That's really cool. The whole piece about being able to sell a recipe is, you know, support during the pandemic. That's really cool. I guess, so what's next for me? I mean, we talked a little bit about rolling it out to the pro chef community, maybe a little bit further down the line, thinking about the home chef, perhaps thinking about, you know, licensing it to major restaurant chains or anything like that?
Well, it's already sort of in the hands of a bunch of restaurant groups, and, you know, culinary schools like ICE and just restaurants all around the country, well, all around the world, really. So we're going to continue. Right now, we're just going to continue to grow. We've been growing really fast since we launched about a year ago, and we're going to continue to double down on creating this incredible experience of recipe creation and management, and stay focused on continuing to build the things that people that our industry wants and is asking for in this tool. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of like our kind of myopic, like short term, you know, like what the next 12 months looks like. We're building new components of the tool, you know, like better ways to sort of manage menus and mobile apps and things like that. So that's going to come much sooner, and ways to sort of push your recipe information to lots of other platforms. But the next sort of phase of that will be, you know, bringing the entire audience into the realm, right? Where like chefs can already start to send their recipes to their audience. They're doing that today. And in the next 12 months, you're going to see a lot more of that, right? With some of the updates that we're doing. And so we'll take those learnings over the next year to really build some really incredible, you know, platforms for like everybody in the world to use to experience these recipes on, you know, on their time.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool. Well, hey, one last question before we go. I appreciate you taking the time, a little bit of a change of pace, like something kind of fun. What's your first dining experience that you can remember?
First ever?
Yeah.
Wow.
In a restaurant.
Oh, in a restaurant.
In a restaurant.
Got it. Well, I mean, how far back are we going? Because I remember.
What jumps out at you?
What's that?
What jumps out at you?
Well, I mean, so I'm not going to go all the way back then. I guess what I'll say, I'll bring up the experience that that really was the catalyst for me deciding that I wanted to be a professional chef. I was in Norway. I was actually traveling the country with some chefs from New York. And this was in 1999 or 2000 or something. And this chef named Terje Næss had just won the Bocuse d'Or the year before. And he opened a restaurant called Oro in Oslo. And it immediately was just, you know, won a Michelin star, and it was an incredible restaurant. And it was the first like tasting menu experience I had where I was just unbelievably like blown away that like, oh my God, I didn't know food could be this. And I still even though it was 20 some odd years ago, 21 years ago now, I vividly remember, you know, the Norwegian, you know, caviar that was wrapped in lardo and deep fried, and the, you know, and the artichoke, you know, celery potato gratin that was like caramelized and glazed, and, you know, the gnocchi that they were like, you know, like searing and then putting the, like, and, wow, and the shallots right out of the bush. Like I worked in the restaurant after I ate there, and so much of, and that's what's so incredible about food, is that there's memories that you'll just never, they're just locked into your brain.
Yep.
And that probably partly because it was the first time I ever had, you know, an experience like that, a tasting menu like that. And also just because it was so kind of, you know, such a paradigm shift for me to realize, like, oh, this is what food is at the highest level. Yeah. So I think they're still around, I'm not sure. But it was called Oro in Oslo. And that's probably one I would bring up.
Nice. I'm gonna put it on my list whenever I get to Norway.
Cool. Awesome, man. Well, and if you're in Chicago, not New York, right?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago now. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there was my wife and I's favorite restaurant in New York forever was this place called Uncle Boone's, and unfortunately, closed during the pandemic. The chefs are like, it's a husband and wife team. They're incredible. I love their food. They have another restaurant in New York that anytime you can get their food, I would get it. So,
cool.
Anyways, this was great, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And thanks for making the time.
All good, man. All happens. Well, congrats on getting the podcast up and running. I hope it keeps growing.
Thank you.